GHQ Radio with Alan McGee.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Alan McGee at GHQ Podcast. My guest is a guy that I've known a long time. He's a brilliant, brilliant singer. He was the first guy in our little Glasgow crew to have a hit. His name's Ian Donaldson, and he was in this band H2O, and this is I Dream to Sleep.
Someone glimpsed across a dance floor, not going home and loving in doorways, a room to remember who to meet in. Secrets and throw your heads and not through your mouth. Alice went anywhere, sharing a sunrise. I've never been a silhouette before. The sound of young Americans, or am I still too young? I dream to sleep, I sleep to dream, I dream to sleep, I sleep to dream. Dancing together, tangled emotions, flashing, you turn your face away. Silent persuasion, the reshape my future, and I'll never be the same again. I dream to sleep, I sleep to dream, I dream to sleep.
This is a GHQ podcast. My name's Alan McGee, and this afternoon, right, the first show after the lockdown in London, I'm up to Glasgow and talking to the singer in a band that I was in at one point called H2O, and it's my good friend Ian Donaldson. How are you?
I'm good, Alan. How about you?
Good, yeah, surviving it, Ian. I mean, you know, it's, I've been walking about. And so you actually done a gig. I can't believe it.
But I know that it was the first gig I'd done in about a year, and it came about because there's a charity night on St Andrew's Night, for anybody that's not aware of St Andrew's Night. It's the 30th of November, and it was to raise funds for Frontline Festival.
Brilliant.
And that was doctors, nurses, you know, everybody that's at the sharp end of this COVID thing. And they asked me to do a kind of an acoustic thing at the start, but I really wanted to kind of make a noise. So fortunately, I got a chance to work with the boys again.
It was a good show. I watched it.
It was great fun. It was great fun.
The great thing about you, Ian, is that a lot of people get old and they actually lose their voice, but you seem to... I don't even think you've lost your voice. You seem to... It seems to have got a lot deeper and a lot more ballsy, weirdly. Do you know what I mean?
You know, it's funny. I never really drank or smoked, and I always... I've been doing vocal exercises for about 30 years now, and I do them every day without... I mean, without fail, I do them every morning and I sing for an hour. And also, I think I've just got to this stage, Alan, where I'm singing what I want to sing and writing the songs I want to sing as well. And I think I'm just kind of letting loose. I mean, imagine letting loose at 61, but there you go.
Well, it was a good gig. And is it still up online, and can people see it?
It is. It's online, and you can get it. If you put it in Frontline Festival, and it's all over. Loads and loads of people have shared it, so it's all over the place, really.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And what do you plan to do with it next year, Ian? Is like, because you put out the Ian GHQ massive is that Ian has had a really quite a big book in Scotland, and he put his first solo album out, I think ever. In fact, I don't ever remember you having a solo album out, but maybe you did, but I don't remember it, Ian.
No, it came out 3 years ago. It was really low key.
No, no, but I know that album. It was a great album, the Blue album.
Yeah, thank you.
But you, I don't think you'd ever done a solo album before the record you put out.
No, you're absolutely right. I did one solo single just after H2O broke up, and that was a version of the Walkabilla song. But since then, I've been writing songs, putting them away, but it's only in the last kind of 4 or 5 years I've really thought, you know, I've got a second wind here. You know, I
definitely
still feel vital, so let's go and do it. You know, that was really it.
And there's a lot of love for you, especially in Scotland. I mean, loads of my pals, they always say, "Oh, like, have you spoke to Ian?" Blah blah blah. And it's a bit like, I think that song. I mean, you were the first out any is to actually have a hit, Ian, which was unbelievable. You had a hit when you were 19 or somewhere.
I did. I was probably the most unlikely at the time because, you know, a lot of other people were having, you know, a lot more impact on TV and radio and all that kind of stuff. But for one reason or another, and I always, I'm like you, Alan, I worship the song. I mean, the song is God with a small G.
Yeah,
you know, it's the thing that defines us and we leave behind. It doesn't matter who we are.
Yeah.
And I just think that the song was the right thing at the right time, and it was unusual sounding, and it just worked.
Yeah, no, it was great. And, you've done great, Ian, you know. And
thank you.
I think, are you going to make another solo record then? Is that where we're going with this?
Oh, absolutely. Instead of doing what I did the last time, we're putting out the album and then it kind of like making a bit of a bang and then dying. The last two singles I've put out with a video and kind of like try to maximise it without sounding like a businessman, because I'm not. I'm still a music fan and I'm still a musician, but you know, I did that, and then Mirrorball's doing the same thing, and I've got the next one lined up, and I'll do a video in early January.
That's the culture,
and it'll be out in February.
That's the culture that we're now in.
It is.
Because
it is.
It's all about tracks. It's just about tracks. And then if you get a role, then it's an album, or even if you like, you just want to make an album out of the tracks, that's what you do. But it is about tracks now. We're just living in a different time, you know.
We really are, and I don't think there's really any point. Even if there's a lot of money behind your album, there's no real guarantee anymore. It's not like you know, the olden days, you could to an extent buy success, if you like, by hook or by crook.
Yeah, man.
But nowadays it's different. So I'm just kind of, I'm just doing it one at a time, but I wrote 5 new songs during lockdown. So
great,
the 3 singles and the 5 and 8, and I've just got 2 more to find. So I will do an album again, but it'll be maybe this time next year, about after 3 or 4 or 5 songs are out.
Yeah.
So I think that's time enough.
There's a guy that we use for plugging, Danny Watson, who is pretty reasonable, and he's done great with some of my bands. You should think about maybe getting him to help you do the radio.
Let me do that. Danny Watson.
Yeah, Danny Watson.
Maybe you know him.
I'll ping you later on. I'll ping you his number. But this little band, Irish band Clockworks, and he's absolutely nailed that. You know what I mean? You know, and so he is good, and he is open to anything. So he's not just about breaking new bands. He's about, like, if he likes it, he'll do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that the older we get, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, what do I really want to do with my time? If I do it, like you and me, like, the Clockworks in particular, my daughter loves them.
Great.
And it's funny, there's a girl called Mary Beth, and she's from Manchester, and she's got her own show on digital radio. Mm-hmm. And she played the Clockworks, and then she played Mirrorball, after each other, which I thought was kind of, you know, that's, you know, the old and the new. So there's
I don't think any of it is now. We're not in that same, I suppose you call it paradigm. We're not in that same reality anymore.
No.
Because it used to be, I mean, when we were growing up, when you and me were like 18, 19, and we were doing the band, right? We thought the Rolling Stones were old. They were only late 30s.
I know, we were thinking those old guys.
I thought they were old. I thought the Rolling Stones, when I was 18, 19, and we were punks, honestly thought, these old guys are Stones, they should go, they're old farts, they should go home. Do you know what I mean?
They should make way for us.
I know. And now the Rolling Stones at 70. The most amazing thing about the Rolling Stones, Ian, is how are they still alive? I don't know. That's mad.
You're absolutely right, especially Keith Richards. I mean, when he was in Pirates of the Caribbean playing Jack Sparrow's dad, I mean, that's what he really looks like. He didn't have to have any makeup on for that. I mean, he really did look like that. It's, you know, it's amazing.
But then, I once bumped into him. I mean, I don't know him, right? But I was in Hollywood at one point, and I think it was the Mondrian Hotel, and I was on the first or second floor, and I pressed the lift to go down, and somebody was going up, and it was basically two or three bouncers, at least two bouncers at the front of the lift, and it was Keith Richards and some guy at the back, completely gone. And it was like, it was looking into, like, you know, it was looking into hell. You looked in, or maybe it was paradise, I don't know. You looked in and you went, right. And then went up. And he was absolutely, that must have been good 25 years ago, but he was like, fuck, he was mental then, you know. That means he was only about 50 then, you know what I mean?
And the thing is, though, you know, it's something, it's got to be genetics some way for Keith Richard, because a lot of people have tried that and not lasted the course.
I agree, mate.
You know, falling out of trees at 70 and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's made of stern stuff.
But it's Jagger that freaks me out more. It's like, see, when he puts these videos
super
up,
fit.
And, you know, I mean, I've luckily got myself, you know, fit again, but I can't dance like that, man. And he's like, and you're watching him go, and you're just thinking, do you know what? You're tiring me out watching you. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I mean, where is Jagger? How can you be that fit at 75?
Listen, I think he's a pixie, and pixie. As you know, I think there's something otherworldly about him, really. Because it's not natural for the other guy that amazes me, and I saw him last year again, is Ian Hunter.
Yeah, brilliant.
From Motley Hoople.
He looks
he's
great.
81 now. He's amazing, and his voice was, all the notes were there. It just was a brilliant. And he's an exception to the rule as well. But most people don't get it. You know what it's like? People start to lose interest when they get a little bit later in life, you know, with families and mortgages and
all. Totally.
And the group, the club is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's really last man standing. And I intend to be last man standing.
Well, you might be. To be fair, you're in good health.
Who knows?
Yeah. But see Ian Hunter, when you see Ian Hunter, I mean, to be that cool looking at 81, I'd have taken that at 50. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know.
He looks amazing.
It's exceptional. I mean, it really is. And the last album we put out, the voice was sounding great. The songs are still brilliant. I mean, he's not repeating himself.
Yeah.
He's singing about other things. It's just, you know, he's one of the few, because, you know, a lot of our heroes are gone now, like Joe Strummer and David Bowie and Lou Reed.
I'm just remembering something. Did we cover Once Bitten, Twice Shy?
We did at one time, we did very early days. We're thinking, and we did Rebel Rebel as well.
I remember
for the
Rebel
very first
Rebel
gig too. And Pictures of Lily by The Who.
Yeah, God, you remember that.
We did.
Yeah. But just when we were talking about Ian Hunter there, I was like, I think we covered that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it's good song.
Yeah. But these guys could all really write that, because we were, like me, you, and his, we were all brought up on that glam thing. And they're writing with these people. And like, Bowie, of course, Bowie's a genius in any genre, you know.
Yes.
But a lot of these other guys were still, in, like Mark Bolan. I had a Mark Bolan weekend about 2 weekends ago. You know, I drove into Cardiff. My pal drove me in, and I was playing Electric Warrior. What a record that is.
Walking in the nude and feel as such a dude, it's a ripoff. Just brilliant.
Yeah. And not Bolan. And Bolan now, I know he's got Hall of Fame and everything like that, but I think actually in the culture, he's kind of forgotten, which is crazy.
He is. And I think there's, I have been thinking about this seriously because of Mirabon. I was thinking about all those things, all those voices. And I think that,
it's very glammy, and it's good.
It's very of a time, and it was brilliant. Telegram Sam, Solid Gold, genius. All those things.
Telegram Sam, amazing.
But I don't think there was the weight. I don't think there was a kind of gravity, like, you know, Life on Mars, and I don't think he really kind of grew out of being an elf again. You know, just a teeny bopper elf.
Yeah.
I think if he'd lived a bit longer, he started to do things like, you know, Teenage Dream and all that, and he was kind of exploring a little bit, but. I don't think the vocabulary was there or the imagery was there for long. Yeah.
Do you know? Do you know the story about the Holy State, Ian? Do you know that?
No, I don't.
But it's crazy. No, I don't. That's crazy. Well, I'm mates with the son. The son's Roland Bolan, so that's the son of June that is alive.
Yeah.
Is that what? What was her second name? June. Oh, was it Gloria Jones? I think it was actually Gloria Jones.
It's Gloria Jones as Roland's mum.
Right, okay. So it's Gloria Jones and Mark, right? And the kid is Roland Bolan, right? And he used to come to my club. And I got talking to him. He's a really, really sweet person, right?
Okay.
And then he said to me one night or something, he goes, "It was McGee, can you buy me a drink?" I went, yeah, no problem, man. But I said, I mean, the money you must have off like that estate, man. And he went, we could talk with that to each other. And he went, oh, I don't have any money. He goes, I've never had any money off the estate. And what had happened, Ian, is the business, I kind of know more than I'm going to say in this, but I'll keep it a bit vague.
Okay.
That basically some of the people that were in charge of that shit put the money offshore. So like, it was like an illegal loophole. And he never got that money.
Is that because him, Mark and Gloria Jones weren't married? Was he not?
He was entitled to it. He was the heir to the estate, but that wasn't disputed. It was just the 70s music business. So leave it there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a few different people that were involved with that. Parked the whole thing, I think in the Canaries or somewhere like that. And then I think these people literally, because it all went down in the 70s, they died off. And I think he got access. And now he's sorted, I'm told. I haven't seen him for years, but I'm told Roland's okay now. But I think, can you imagine being, your old man was Mark, and everybody thinks you're like, you know, you're minted, and you're the poorest guy in the room, you know what I mean?
I think the same thing happened with the Rollers' money as well. It was kind of tied up abroad, and they never saw it either.
That was just Tam Payton, wasn't it? You know what I mean?
I think he spent the money, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, you know, that was just messy, messy business, man. You know what I mean, you know? So Glasgow's in it. You're in the top tier of the lockdown, Ian. Yeah,
we are. We are. It's not pleasant, but it is what it is, Alan. You just got to kind of take it a day at a time, I suppose, like everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, people I know have got it. You know, there's people, singers and a couple of singers that I, you know, and bands that I'm very involved, you know, with, you know, and they've got it. But, you know, so far we've avoided hospital. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's crazy. You don't want to go getting it. But you and me just before we came on here, we were both going, we both think we probably did have it. Do you know what I mean?
I had a cough that started the night before lockdown. My daughter and I went to Clyde Bank to make the video for this record.
Brilliant.
And we just finished at midnight, but I was coughing a lot on the train.
Good.
And then I basically coughed almost non-stop for about 6 weeks after that.
Yeah.
I lost my voice, really, because I'd hurt it that much by coughing so bad, and I had to kind of build it up a little bit, like going to the gym almost again.
Yeah,
I had to just take it a little bit of time. It took me about 3 months before I was singing again. I'm like you. I think I've had it maybe as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think I had it. I think it was about a year ago today. I'd went off to Ireland with the Clockworks in the Monday, so we're both doing two different tours. And I was meant to do a Q&A and then a DJ set in two different days in Galway. Never, and for me to not show up is kind of mad. I never don't show up, but I just couldn't do it. I was in the hotel, got back to Dublin and then back to London and then fought on for the next 6, 7, 8 days and then went to the doctor and he went, you've got to just go to bed. And
stop.
I did. Yeah. And then that was it. I was all right. But I think I got off light, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you did. It sounds very much like it. I've, a couple of pals of mine, they're a bit older than me, and they both got it and they're both gone now as well. So
a lot of people still don't believe it. But see with Bowie and stuff like that, do you have all the different bootlegs? Because I know you're probably the biggest David Bowie fan I think I know, which is, and you're more of a Bowie fan.
That's coming from you.
Yeah, because I love Bowie. I absolutely love him. But do you have absolutely, I don't mean just the obvious records, like everything that came out commercially, but do you have everything, Ian? Do you have all the bootlegs and everything?
I don't have all the bootlegs. I stopped at one point because I thought that's just another concert off that tour that I've already got something off. But what I have been collecting is I've been collecting all the books, you know, all the kind of issues from, you know, wherever I could find them. So I've got this big pile of the most recent one I've got is the one where he's got his Bowie collector, which is he's showing all his art, and the which is a wee bit highbrow for me, but I buy the unusual things, but in book form.
Yeah.
But not so much the bootlegs anymore, because I've kind of heard it all before anyway, so I think there's much point.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, unbelievable. I never met Bowie, but I was like...
Oh, no, on all the time, all doing all the things, no?
Yeah, I never ran into him.
I thought you would have.
Yeah, I met most of them, Ian, but it's I never ran into Bowie. I think there might have been an aspect to me, though. Sometimes if I really like somebody, I can't deal with it, so I don't meet them.
Just in case...
I met Lou in 88, 89 with Seymour Stein, who'd signed him, and he was horrible to me. And that actually didn't piss me off because I tell you why it didn't actually piss me off, because I kind of thought if you meet Lou Reed, he is going to be horrible, and he fucking was. Do you know what I mean? But I think if David Bowie had been horrible to me, I think I'd have been gutted, man. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, I don't think that would have happened. I've never seen him. You know, I've known of people stopping the street when he was living in New York and like saying hi and going for a coffee, you know, depending on what kind of mood he was in. But the only person, I've met a lot, like you have met a lot of people. The only person that I really didn't get along with was Simon Le Bon.
He came to see us. But he probably just saw you as a peer and he was jealous. And that's what a lot of these guys are like. They're just insecure, do you know what I mean?
Well, like, it's true, but you know, when you're young and he's young and you know, you just kind of think you're in a gang.
I've got a good Simon Le Bon story I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, we had to get pulled apart though, because he was so rude. He was so rude to me that I just kind of, the governing boy came out and we had to get separated. it's absolutely true. I thought he was a horrible guy, but hey, there you go.
I'll tell you a good one. So we're sitting about 97 at the Brits.
Right.
And I'm sitting with James Brown from Loaded. not James Brown. Sorry, James Brown. It runs. He ran the magazine.
Oh, right,
but big pals with him at the time, and I still am actually now. So me and James are sitting, and it's 8 o'clock at night, and it's just before they flick the TV cameras on, right? And I look to my left, Ian, and Simon Le Bon is dad dancing on Ecstasy round tables, right? And me and James are like,
I'm scared. Stop.
And we're looking at Simon Le Bon dad dancing, and he's like, because he's obviously out of his mind on E, thinking he's the sexiest man in the world, right? But he's actually about 40 with a paunch belly, right? And we're looking at him going, right, And so he's dancing around the tables, and he's on Virgin at the time. It was just before they had the big comeback record, right? I think it was Ordinary World or something.
Maybe
Ordinary World had happened. It might have happened, but he was at this table, a Virgin table. And then he's kind of like, there's a few of the girls at Virgin, I knew the girls actually, and they were like looking embarrassed. I was looking at them and they were kind of looking at me with their eyes going, for fuck's sake. And then Simon Le Bon spots Noel Gallagher, right? And Noel Gallagher is sitting like a wee guy trying to avoid Simon Le Bon, looking intently at his fucking dinner, right? Right, because you'd had the food before they go to the awards. And of course, he's out of his mind and he sits almost on Noel's knee, and I don't know what the interaction was, right? But it wasn't going that well. And James Brown turns around and goes, do you think Simon Le Bon knows something we don't know? Do you know what I mean? Because the way he was acting, he was the biggest guy in the room. And at that point, you just had to, but it wasn't cool. It was funny, but it wasn't cool. Do you know what I mean? It was just basically being... what was cool about it, in one way, it was utterly unfiltered, right? But what was uncool about it was uncool. Do you know what I mean? You know, so it was mad. I'm like, but
in a way, that doesn't surprise me. From my dealings, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
poor Noel.
Noel was sitting in his plate going, because it would have been like par for the course, Noel to be a cunt to him, but he wasn't trying to do that. Noel was just basically going, can you leave me alone? And Simon Le Bon out of his mind, man, you know. But yeah, I mean, I've always heard weird stories about that guy. So I don't hate him or anything. I don't know him.
Me neither. I just thought it was really unpleasant. That was all. Chilling for all that malarkey, you know. But you still remember these things, and it doesn't hurt me anymore. But it just is what it is. It's rock and roll. Another rock and roll story, isn't it?
No, I mean, you know, Simon Le Bon, like. Dance. I mean, yeah. Once you've seen Simon Le Bon dad dance and trying to be sexy, you just like, it's an unforgettable sight. Do you know what I mean? But did you ever see Cockney Rebellion back in the day?
I did. In fact, I spent a couple of days in the studio with Steve Harley.
Did you?
Steve. But in the kind of mid '80s, Steve Harley was on a label that was a subsidiary of RCA, he put a couple of records. He put a new version of Sebastian, that's what it was. Right. Anyway, cut a long story short, but the end of, remember the record company used to do those big end of the year things and invite all the artists from all over the world, and everybody would have a big slap up meal and they'd hand out gold records and all that. Anyway, we met Steve Harley there, and we were just chatting to him, the whole band were. So we let him hear a couple of tracks off the H2 album, and he liked one of them. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you want to kind of maybe do a remix or something? So he said, yeah. So about a month later, we went to a studio in Marble Arch. A guy called Bob Butterworth, do you know of Bob?
I know the name. I know the name.
You will do. He was the engineer on Anarchy in the UK. So during that time, we spent a couple of days in the studio with him. And Bob Butterworth told me that the guitar solos on Anarchy in the UK were done by Chris Spedding.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Right. But I thought Steve Harley was a real interesting guy. But what I did say to him was, I brought up the thing about glam because, you know, like you, I just love glam, all those amazing records and voices. And he was horrified. And he actually said to me, don't associate me with those people. That's what he said to me. I was like, whoa. Touched a nerve there, but I just thought Judy Teen and Mr. Soft were kind of glam in a way, you know, but there you go. He wasn't having any of it. He was a nice man, though.
Yeah, but you know the thing is about that glam thing, because we come for the punk thing, right? But the glam thing was another step on. I mean, it was like, who was it? Ian McNay, who runs, he owns Cherry Red, and he used to be the accountant for Bell Records.
Wow, they were selling a lot of records in those days.
But he said, he goes, McGee, he goes, we were talking about the rock and roll thing, and he went, the most debauchery I ever saw. He had to leave the company because it got too much. It was a Bell Records, he said. And I don't know what that actually means, but I think we do know what it means, you know. It was dodgy. He just says, Bell Records, man. That was insane. Because he was the accountant.
Well, that was Gary Glitter's label, so he must have saw some wild things.
And Jonathan King.
Yes, again. And you all know what happened there. Shit. I know. You know, the thing about those days, Alan, is that I think that for a lot of serious musicians, then and since, have kind of put glam in the bin, and I'm trying to haul it back out the bin, because when you think of the amazing songs and the amazing players, everybody had a different kind of voice, not like nowadays where all the guys sound a bit like each other. Yes, they
but,
were.
But look, see, if Gary Glitter hadn't behaved like an absolute fucking idiot and a horror of a human being, right? If he'd just been a normal person, that his legacy is utter genius, because the records are incredible.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Do you remember hearing Rock and Roll Part 2 for the very first time? You think of, what is that?
Yeah, it's genius.
It was brilliant. Yes.
In America, nobody knows Gary Glitter was a... I've actually seen my producer. I just remembered a story. If I can't tell it on air, can I? No. I'll tell you off air, Ian, right?
All right, okay.
But Gary, the producer, he's got a good story about Gary Glitter. Right. Do you know what I mean? You know? But it's a good story. Do you know what I mean? But... yeah, I mean, it is what, you know, these records were incredible. When in The Joker, when Joaquin Phoenix is coming down the stairs and it's Rock and Roll Part 2, you go, amazing. Do you know what I mean?
It's as good as, you know, like Marilyn Monroe in the subway. To me, that's iconic.
Yeah,
it's
man.
Just one of those amazing things.
Yeah,
you wouldn't think that song would go with, you know, like they slowed him down when he's dancing on the steps, but you wouldn't have thought those two would marry, but it's perfect.
Yeah.
Just absolute genius pairing.
Yeah. No, I know. These old glam tunes are absolutely amazing. And Sweet as well, Ian, because because the thing about Sweet was it was a hard rock band that could play with an amazing genius songwriter, Mike Chapman.
And that's
how it was amazing. It's like, he's like, you know, they Mike Chapman maybe couldn't have... No, Mike Chapman played direct. I think there was a certain point Sweet took over the playing on the records, he told me. But the initial ones, like Little Willie,
that's right.
Wigwam Bam, that was Mike. But then when the Sweet started playing on the records, like Ballroom Blitz is Sweet, then it's just much better, isn't it?
And the thing is, I think the agreement was that Chin and Chapman would write the A sides and they would be allowed to write the B sides. So when you flip those 45s over, you're getting a kind of heavy rock sound, which kept them happy.
Yeah. Right. Oh,
they were just amazing.
They were great. Now, though, I don't think the young people now, I don't think they would want the co-writes, but they wouldn't. You know, they wouldn't let somebody just write the songs for them. You know, because again, we're in a different time now, aren't we? Do you know what I mean?
We are. And I think that, you know, young writers or any writer should be encouraged. But there's one thing I do can object to. See that phrase that's become really popular now, write a word and get a third. I don't like that. I really don't like that. I think that's theft.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, you know? It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an album that I'm doing at the moment. It's coming out next year for one of my artists, and I picked the artist up, and it was kind of I won't say too much, but there's a lot of co-writes on that one, and I'm trying, and there's a lot.
How'd
of production
you sort that
parts.
Out though?
Yeah, we are. Don't worry.
You are okay. You know, that's
got,
good. Okay.
I've got a lawyer on it. It will be fine in the end. But it's like, you know what I mean? It's like. You know, welcome to 2020, do you know what I mean? You know?
But people are saying I was in the room when it was written, so they want a co-write as well.
Yeah.
What? So was the guy making the tea. So was the machines. What, give the machines a co-write as well? You know, just, I don't know.
So your latest song, Mirrorball, Ian, and was that a co-write with Gordon, or is that you?
No, that was me.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, thank you. No, I loved it. Just harking back to those amazing times. Just, you could see where glam became punk, can't you? That's not, I mean, baby, you know, like Slade,
Brilliant.
You know, you could see her unaware, a forerunner of punk as well. So it made perfect sense. But you know, of all the times that we could have been born, Alan, we were born in maybe the best time ever in the whole time of the planet.
Oh, and that's what people say, you know, at least I was born at the time that David Bowie was alive. Do you know what I mean? David Bowie,
I agree.
Incredible. But are you going to do some shows, Ian? Or are you just
No. There's a couple of things lined up. I'm going to do a Glasgow show in the late June. I've postponed it a couple of times, but I think that maybe we'll have the vaccine by then, and maybe people will be happy enough to come out. But a very long story short, I've been offered a couple of gigs in Manila.
Brilliant.
Next year.
Brilliant.
And there's, I didn't
is
know
that because H2O had a big hit there? Is that what that's about?
They did, but yeah. it wasn't at any of the hits here. It was a song called "Who'll Stop the Rain,"
right.
Which I didn't even know was it. But Blue Diamond, and we did a version of "I Fought the Law."
Brilliant.
Was also a hit there.
Brilliant.
So there's an agent there and a promoter, and they've basically put together a band to learn the songs. So I just kind of jump on a plane, go over there, and do two
you
or three
do
shows
it.
And come back.
That'd
be fun. I mean, of course, aye.
That's the great thing about what we all do, you know, the music game. It's like you sometimes go, this is not that bad, you know what I mean, you know?
Yeah, right. How can I complain? And you know, it's every day's a bonus to me.
Yeah, I mean, and Manila is like, I've never been to Philippines, you know what I mean?
But
all these countries at the moment, all the borders are shut. I mean, I think they're really feeling it, because a lot of places like Thailand, you know, Philippines, it's a tourist economy, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
It is. They don't have the infrastructure like we have. They don't have the hospital, because I've spoken to the promoter a couple of times, and they're really, really, really struggling, because they've got the, you know, kind of tsunami weather that happens to them as well, and monsoons. And he said, this is just something we didn't need, because the hospitals aren't that well equipped, and there's not ventilators. And he said, we're really struggling over here. And it's easy to forget that, isn't it? It really is.
It's crazy. Right, Ian, I'm going to let you go, my friend.
Okay.
When I'm up, I will get in touch with you, and we're going to play. We're going to play a couple of your tracks.
Brilliant.
Thanks for doing it, dude. All right.
No worries. Look after yourself.
Be good, mate.
Soon.
Bye.
You too, bud.
Bye. That was a great interview. Thanks very much, Ian. And this is Ian Donaldson. This track's available on all the streaming platforms, and this is called Mirrorball.
Remember
You have been listening to GHQ Radio, presented by Alan McGee, with his guest Ian Donaldson. Recorded and mixed by Gary Salter, with additional production from Jason Alday and Brian Anderson. GHQ Radio is recorded for GHQ Magazine.
GHQ Radio. Find us at ghqmagazine.com.